Our reading this morning is a poem by Carl Dennis. To live each day as if it might be the last is an injunction that Marcus Aurelius inscribes in his journal to remind himself that he too, however privileged, is mortal, that whatever bounty is destined to reach him has reached him already many times. But if you take his maxim too literally and devote your mornings to tinkering with your will, your afternoons and evenings to saying farewell to family and friends, you'll come to regret it. Soon your lawyer won't fit you in his schedule. Soon your dear ones will hide in a closet when they hear your heavy steps on the porch, and then your house will slip into disrepair. If this is my last day, you'll say to yourself, why waste time sealing drafts in the window frames or cleaning gutters or patching the driveway? If you don't want your heirs to curse the day you first opened Marcus's journals, take him simply to mean you should find an hour each day to pay a debt or forgive one or write a letter of thanks or apology. No shame in leaving behind some evidence that you were hoping to live beyond the moment. No shame in a ticket to a concert 7 months off, or better yet, two tickets, as if you were hoping to meet someone who'd love to join you, two seats near the front so you can catch each note. Well, I chose this poem by Carl Dennis as the reading this morning because it's the season when our religious and secular culture focuses on hope in a future that is promised to us. The poem playfully reminds us about an alternative piece of spiritual advice that we often hear. You probably have heard it from me, live in the moment, and its distinct disadvantages if you take it too seriously. Passing through this month of Western religious holidays, the theme of hope that we're building our services in December around fits very well the overarching messages of both Judaism and Christianity. For Jews, the redemptive promise of the Messiah foretold by the prophets has been a comfort when the present moment held only persecution and suffering. And the early Christians adapted that redemptive promise and proclaimed that the Messiah had indeed come, and that the future held a promise of eternal life for all who believed in him. Now, even the secular humanists among us who are unimpressed by these stories recognize that the Christmas season's central symbol is a newborn baby, and that all doctrine aside, each new child born into this world represents a hope for a better world. Indeed, I would say that the whole idea of hope as a human emotion presumes that there will be a future that is different and better than the present. Asian religions that have a cyclical view of time don't necessarily emphasize hope in the same way as a spiritual virtue or promise. So our poet Carl Dennis is quoting the Roman philosopher Marcus Aurelius, who was a first century Stoic, and of course the emperor's advice to himself to maintain his awareness of his mortality is to treat each day as it were his last, to live a life, in other words, without a future. I like the way the poem skewers that idea. It seems to me having a future and looking towards it with hope may be a unique aspect of being human. I'm pretty sure that we share with the larger-brained animals a consciousness of time and the rhythms of the seasons, and then indeed all beings have instincts that help us anticipate the needs that the seasons bring. Yet when we get to this season, the darkest time and the longest night of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, it makes me wonder about those fears that our earliest humanoid ancestors who lived in these climates must have felt as that all-important sun and the long, precious hours of daylight faded away. How could their consciousness contain the possibility that the sun would not just sink below the horizon and disappear forever, leaving them in endless darkness? I think that their wise elders, perhaps those who had reached the ancient age of maybe 20, must have reminded the youngest that they had seen the sun come back many times, and they had good reason to hope for its return. And not only could they hope, these wise elders would say, but they could help by performing the chants and the dances and the rituals that were required to bring the sun back. And so the celebrations of the midwinter season began in some fashion thousands and thousands of years before the birth of Jesus. And they exist in different ways, and even in the cultures that do look at time as a circle rather than as a line. Human beings feel a need to express hope in the darkness by lighting our candles or our fires, by telling our stories of triumph against long odds, and by celebrating our births. But hope in the darkness isn't just one thing. I actually think there are at least three different kinds of hope. And it's worth knowing the difference between them because they serve for us different needs at different times. The first kind of hope, I'll call it hope number one, is the hope of experience. And it's based on what's happened in the past. The sun didn't disappear forever last year, and within a few weeks, we started to notice the days getting longer. Kids who grow up in the gift-giving traditions of Christmas figure out hope number one pretty quickly. Because when you get that Christmas present that you asked for and really wanted for Christmas, not only at your first memorable Christmas, but at the one after that, and then the one after that, it's easy enough to be hopeful that this is going to happen again. Hoping for something that you have good reason to believe will actually happen is kind of a delightful hope to carry around. It has all of the tantalizing excitement of anticipation and very little of the anxiety of what if it doesn't happen. Now, adults at the holiday season who are about now getting very busy and maybe too stressed could use more of hope number one. Most of the time, if you think about it, in past years, you've come through all the stress of getting ready for the holiday and ended up unbelievably having a wonderful time. So enjoy the hope that the same thing is going to happen again for you. Hope number two is a little different than that. Hope number two is when you're hoping for something that you think could happen, there is a chance it will happen, and you know that it is very possible for it to happen. But you're not sure how it's going to happen. And it may rely on some things that you have to do right now that help make it possible for that future to occur. And that's why I would call hope number two the hope of intention. Because it has to be based in the present. Now, social activists know something about hope number two. The goal that you're after, that change in policy or legislation, may seem far off and the path uncertain, but experience tells you that such goals have been accomplished before, and your intention is to take just the next step to keep the change that you seek alive in the public consciousness. Another good example of this kind of hope that many of us have experienced is the aspiration to finish school and graduate. Doesn't matter whether we're talking about elementary school or middle or college or grad school. I think the hope involved is the same. There's some experience from the past to go on. You know that lots of other people finish school and graduate. And maybe if this is higher education, you may have already successfully done that, and you should be able to do it again, this time as well. But there are so many things involved to make that happen. You have to keep doing those things over time, and you have to make choices in many different now moments to choose that goal rather than something you would much rather be doing right now. Lots of things to learn, projects and requirements, and you have to want it. You have to want to graduate to make it happen. It's not going to happen on its own. So you feel hopeful that you can finish school and graduate because you have trust in yourself to do the work necessary to make it happen. And you also trust the people that are there to help you. And you feel like you're going to be enough to meet the challenge that school throws at you, and that there is this community of teachers and students who are there, along with your family, to make sure that the hope that you are feeling that you will graduate does not die and that you will achieve your goal. This kind of experience during our school years, I think, is partly intended to set some lifetime habits around hope that now start to look like hope number one, the hope of experience. Because you have been successful before, you have good reason to hope that you can be successful again. But you have to avoid trust in yourself turning into overconfidence or arrogance, so that you don't forget that you still need those in your life who are part of your family, your team, your network of support. Few of us are successful and remain successful by doing everything on our own. And that leads me to hope number three, and that is the hardest kind of hope to have. If you've been part of a community that has helped you to find hope before, it is easier to have it, but it's still tough, because hope number three is when you hope that something in your life or in the world will change, and there's almost nothing you can do to make that come about. You just have to wait and hope. And I call this the hope of faith, because it's the hope that has to be based in a belief that there is going to be a future that will be better than the present. Up till now, the first two kinds of hope I've been talking about have been easy enough because they do involve things we can do or we have done to make the hope turn into a reality. In the hope of faith, all you got is the hope, or maybe the expression of that hope, which many religious traditions will call prayer. Now, I'm going to come back to prayer in a minute, but let me note, this third kind of hope doesn't always have to be about some scary or life-threatening bad thing that we hope will not happen. Playing the lottery is a good example of hope number three. Lots of people who don't buy lottery tickets because the odds of winning are very small, rational people like me, where you know that there's just a small chance in hundreds of millions that you're going to win, we'll still go out and buy that ticket when the lottery hits $1 gazillion. I do. I do the one thing that I can make it possible to win the $1 gazillion. And after that, it's kind of fun to wait and hope, even though you are totally sure you will be disappointed. It's a little like the frenzy during the playoffs when the odds are still pretty bad that your favorite sports team is going to win. Then you kind of expect they'll eventually lose, but the hope of faith in your team can be entertaining. But that kind of hoping for the big lottery prize remains healthy fun as long as we don't start believing those fantasies and let the hope overcome the reality and quit our job. What's more important to talk about today is the hope that we need to find when we're not just playing a game, but when things are indeed really bad and you're not sure how they are going to get better, and it looks like there's nothing you can do but wait and hope. I know that there are some in this room who've been in that kind of place, and I'm sure it's where our friend Stephanie Elechko and her dad Jim and her brother Tristan are today as she starts her new cancer treatments. The worst part about it is you're not sure whether anything that you already know about hope number to the hope of intention, for example, makes any difference. Maybe there is something I can do about this. Does prayer mean anything? Does it make a difference? Does my diet, does my attitude, does my friend's support, does everybody's good intentions make a difference? So here's where the faith comes in, because I think hope number three is the hope of faith, because it requires you to believe that the answer to all of those questions is yes. When there is nothing that you really can do, you can trust and you can do what you can that feels right for you to do. I am a fairly rational non-theist that doesn't have an idea of a God that responds directly to individual prayers. But that does not mean that I don't believe prayers help. It's a much more mysterious universe than my little mind can hold. And what happens both inside people's bodies and in the larger world of interdependent beings that we're all a part of is that's bigger than each of us, when is something that changes and responds in ways that I don't completely understand when we find ourselves turning our hopes outward and saying them aloud. So I'm an agnostic about those kinds of things. I can't prove that spiritual exercises like visualization or meditations work in healing. But I sure know that there's a lot that goes into healing from an illness or a loss or a natural disaster than just the physical repair. Having the hope of faith is absorbing what you've learned from the experiences of hope number one and adapting what you've learned from your successful intentions in hope number two, and using them both as the midwives that can give birth to hope number three, the hope that has nothing to stand on and that helps us learn how to stay afloat in a big ocean of uncertainty. Hope number three, the hope of faith in a future we can't see, is also what makes it possible for us to sustain our work as social activists for justice over a long period of time. And there's a true story that I'm sure all of us have heard before about one of this world's heroes who was alive in our lifetimes and taught us a lot about the hope of faith. Locked in the box of a prison for 27 years for his political activities, he had no reason to believe that he would ever get out or that his country would ever change. I'm talking, of course, about the first democratically elected president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela. Mandela's story is a powerful remembrance that hope in the darkness is possible and can be realized. And for Mandela, even when he was in solitary confinement and all alone, his hope that his life and the life of his country would someday be better was not based on anything he could do for himself physically, because he was isolated and powerless in prison. His hope had to be based on an inspiration that came from the community of people that supported him that he knew were still there outside the prison. So my own favorite quote from Nelson Mandela is this one. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. A persistent symbol of this season is a light shining in the darkness, and it is the hope that we celebrate at the turn of the winter solstice. To be able to dig deep and find that light, that third kind of hope in times of crisis, illness, and despair about the world, you do have to start with yourself and the conviction that you know you are a person of worth and dignity and value, and that your life matters. And even when there seems to be nothing to be done to change a situation that feels terrible, even when it is hard to see when and how change might come, that is the one thing that you must be able to do to sustain the hope of faith. May we each find ways to do that, and in doing so, to encourage hope among those we care for who are going through their own difficult times. Let your light shine so that others may see that light and share that hope. May it be so.